There are times that our ability and willingness to say no is actually saying yes to what matters more.
Hi, I'm Carl Vaders, and welcome to The Church Lobby, Conversations on Faith and Ministry. My guest today is Chris Maxwell, and we'll be talking about the importance of contentment in life and ministry from his new book, Contentment: What You're Searching For May Already Be Yours. In our conversation, Chris and I talk about what contentment is not, laziness or mediocrity, what it is, an inner peace, what causes so much discontent, and why contentment is essential for healthy lives and ministries, and so much more. And don't forget to stick around when the interview is done. I'll come back with my short take on one way we often spot discontent in others, but that we may need to pay a little more attention to when it happens in our lives. Well, Chris Maxwell, welcome to the Church Lobby. It's good to have you here today.
Thank you, Carl. It's an honor to be with you.
Well, you wrote a book, Contentment: What You're Searching For May Already Be Yours. I had a chance to read an advance copy. It is now out and available. The title struck me, and then as I read it through, the content really registered with me as well, which is why I wanted to talk to you today. But I'm going to start right out with maybe the simplest but most basic question, but it may not be as simple an answer as people think. What is contentment?
Yeah, you know, that's a word that I had heard many times in life, but when it was spoken into my life in a particular way, I was like, what is it? You know, what is it? So then I invested a year in reading every book I could on contentment, studying about it. What does scripture say about it? What does it mean? And how can we live it, learn about it, but then live it in our everyday lives here in this hurried, competitive culture of life and church and leadership? It's like nothing much is inviting us to a life of contentment. Not many voices are luring us toward calm, still waters. It's inviting us to the next trend and the next have to do this. And I was invited by a professional Christian counselor to just consider the word contentment and what it was saying to me.
Yeah, I mean, discontent almost seems to be promoted as a virtue, and contentment almost as though it's something close to a vice. Like at one point you even say straight up and right in the book, contentment isn't laziness or mediocrity, because often that's what we think it is, right? So why, we haven't even defined it yet, but before we do, why do we tend towards this idea of discontent as somehow an inspirational term and contentment that it might be something like, to the point where you have to clearly state it is not laziness or mediocrity? Obviously, the only reason you have to say that is because a lot of people consider it laziness or mediocrity. Why do we have such a misunderstanding about this?
You're right. I had to describe what it isn't before we go in to talk about what it is and how to live it. Because we are, honestly, Carl, we are so driven by competition, by this internal lure and desire to prove something, to prove worth and value, but also the external voices that are like so noisy now. I mean, it's like the high volume noise that we are hearing in leadership, in seeking some type of goal-centered life. And in church, in the church world, it's more is better, newer is the most from God kind of stuff. And honestly, as I spend my time right here in the office where I'm having this conversation with you, I talk to students all day here, university students, and honestly, they're getting tired of the show. They're getting tired of the push. And it's like, but internally, they're struggling because they feel like they have to prove something. They have to be the best, best meaning what we interpret it to mean in our culture, the highest score, the one who has the best stat sheet. And I'm like, boy, that is bringing so much harm to us because it is discouraging calmness and peace and rest. And then this word that is kind of the word of my life now, contentment.
So we're discontent. What are the seeds It almost sounds Shakespearean. What are the seeds of our discontent?
Yeah.
Obviously, our devices are participating in that, but obviously, that's also not the genesis of this. So, can it be traced back to a genesis? Is there somewhere where you go back and go, this is where our discontent came from? Maybe literally from Genesis, right?
Yeah, it is. It goes to the beginning, and it's like we're always looking for the next possible fruit because we're never satisfied with what we are served in this meal of life. We are always just kind of wired to look out the window for the next or the better. And when my counselor said that word to me, Carl, it was like, this is the end of our counseling appointment. Okay. It was like nearing the end. And he looked at me and he used a phrase that most counselors would not use, at least stating it this particular way. And he said, Chris, I have a word for you. Well, when he said that, I mean, it was like it kind of got my attention. And so I grabbed my phone. I knew I wanted to write it down to make sure I remember what he says. And he said the word contentment. And as soon as he said it, it wasn't. And I love words. I mean, I love conversations and dialogue and words and word plays and illustrations. But when he said that word, I could tell it was a word for me. Now, I did not know what all it meant or why it was a word for me, but I knew it was. And I just kind of stared out the window. I see him at a place in the Northeast Georgia mountains, and my counseling session is not just my time with the counselor, but I try to take a day to go to the waterfalls and go to the mountains. And so I just looked out the window, and I didn't respond verbally. So he responded. He said, Chris, are you okay with that? I just nodded, yes, because I felt like it was the right word for me, because it was like this missing ingredient that I needed to know more about, that I needed, but did not know that I needed it. And so then I just spent the next months reading every book I could, every scripture, and studying and researching and then journaling. And that's what turned into the book, Contentment. But that's how it started. It started in that conversation with a professional counselor, stating a word that I did not know would turn into a theme of life for me now.
Okay, so what is contentment? Now that we've talked around it, we've talked about what some of it isn't and how you came to it. If someone listening was to be asked the question, what is contentment? What does it mean to be content? Is there even a short sentence that can define it, or is it just too complex for that?
Well, I tried to be able to summarize it many times throughout the book, but I kept writing and writing and writing. And then, what was thought of maybe initially to be an article or a story did turn into a book. But if you know what you're saying in a sermon or a book, you need to be able to summarize it. So to me, contentment is finding peace internally, not based upon external circumstances. It is letting our value on the theological statement that we could argue, a biblical phrase or a favorite verse. Yeah, but just a reminder, I'm made in the image of God. I am loved by Him, and He is my guide. He is guiding me and providing for me, and He is not paying attention to the stat sheet. Honestly, Carl, it is Jesus leaving after the miracles when the marketing team is ready to promote his newest miracle, and he just leaves and goes to spend time with the Father. He's just be content in the present, in the now, not always pushed for the what next, what can we do better. That was such a great church service we had. How can we do an even better one? We brought this many people in this week. How can our numbers improve? And I think Jesus sometimes is shaking his head and saying, can you just come hang out with me now? Is that enough? Are you never satisfied? Are you just needing this ongoing buffet of more accomplishments? Or can you just come and sit beside the Father? Come and sit beside the Son. Come and just be with the Spirit of the Lord and find peace in those moments.
Yeah, the way it appears to manifest most often in my circles is when, as you just described, a great service happens or some wonderful event happens, a family event, whatever it might be, something happens, and there's not even a pause to be in that moment to appreciate that thing. Immediately, it has to be what's next, what's next, what's next. Those who are living a life of contentment, it's not that they don't have drive. It's not that they don't have passion at all. It's that they can at least take a pause. They can at least
Yeah.
live in this moment and appreciate this moment without having to immediately piggyback what's next, what's bigger on top of it. And it's not even often necessarily a really long period of time. It's not like you just sit there and wallow in it, although why not wallow in something that's wonderful and joyous
Yeah.
for a bit of time? But for those who can't even take a moment, they're always looking for the next thing. That appears to be such a discontented way to live.
It is, and we miss the what now because our attention is already pushed to the what next. And why not value the now? Jesus doesn't always take the fast lane. He invites us to the slow lane, and he may keep us there for a while, and then he may want us to get off that main road and take some slow turns down paths that we are not that familiar with, and that we may not be watched and noticed by others as we do that. But those are the moments that can bring healing to us and move us from this world of competition and move us to that place of just contentment, just resting. I mean, your schedule is busy. My schedule is busy. We love what we do. We believe we're called by God to do these things. But the true meaning of that is he is calling us to do what he wants to do through us. And he's not keeping the same stat sheet that we are. It's a whole different world of rhythm and pace that he's inviting us to be participants in.
What would you say to the person who's listening to this right now and is thinking, okay, I like what I'm hearing, but I'm concerned that if I slow down to enjoy, if I embrace contentment, they're concerned that they might at the same time be in danger of embracing laziness or embracing mediocrity or embracing settling for
Yeah.
less? Is there a danger that true contentment can lead to that, or are we even misunderstanding contentment if we think there's even a possibility that can lead to that?
Well, our misunderstood perspective of contentment could sort of create that climate. But truly understanding contentment, again, mentally, just Jesus inviting us to this place of calmness and peace. He wants us to rethink contentment, what it is, what it isn't, and to live with limits. I mean, kind of Sabbath mentality is honestly, it's missing. I write about it. I've written a whole series of books on pause, but it's difficult to pause. But what it does to us, and this part may not be fun, this may not be the smile or the giggle part that we need, it helps us find our true selves. And there are parts of ourselves we do not like. And the busyness can be our drug of choice. The pursuit of success can be our addictive medication. And if we avoid those, and if we choose to find contentment in the present, we might really have to get to know ourselves. And we have often chosen to not do that. We are better with the mic and on stage and being this other person instead of just being okay with who we are. Again, that's not giving up. I mean, I write about gratitude and generosity. Let's be people who are motivated, but remember the why and the who that's inviting us to do this and give him the honor of doing the work through us. And honestly, I just do not think he's keeping score or ranking the way that we are culturally and internally.
Yeah, you mentioned how busyness is often a drug of choice, especially for our primary listeners who are, pastors and pastors of even of small churches who are often bivocational and have an awful lot to do and feel like they're always behind on their to-do list. And that is all true. None of that is to be denied or trivialized. It is all true. But I think you're right that for so many of us, we're afraid to slow down. We're afraid to turn down the noise because we are not comfortable with our internal dialogue. And so the busyness keeps those internal voices quiet. And I think probably the primary drugs of choice for North American pastors are food and busyness. And I think food is only the more obvious of the two because it physically shows in our bodies. But busyness is probably the one that is most praised and therefore something that we often don't even see, because nobody looks at us and goes, there's a problem that you're doing so much. We're praised for being so busy.
Yeah. And if we are not so busy, we assume, and those around us assume, are they okay? You know, what's going on? Why am I choosing to pursue the still waters and the calmness of just resting in the now instead of grabbing the latest trend? That's the other thing that I hear often of people, and this is not just college students, I mean, of all ages, the elderly who maybe they've been in ministry and they're nearing retirement. You know how they feel about themselves? They feel like failures. They didn't pastor the largest church. They weren't like what we would consider successful in the newest, coolest trend. So the elderly are lacking contentment. The younger generation, they are so overwhelmed with every new device and everything that's causing them to run in such a hurry. They don't even understand contentment. They are desperate for it. And then all of the ages in between, the young and the old, it's like we all are familiar with a life without contentment. And I'm wanting to just raise my voice now in a gentle way and say, this is medicine for us. It's contentment. We titled the introduction to the book, The Search That Never Had to Begin. You know those times that you have your keys in your hand, but you're searching drastically for your keys, or your phone is in your pocket, but you're searching your phone? Well, we are searching for something that the Spirit of the Lord has already put within us and upon us. We're just desperately searching for it. And then toward the end, you already have what you're looking for. So we're looking for this that is ours from God, peace, calmness, assurance in Him, even when things are not always fun or easy, when we have struggles. And those of us that live with some type of disability, we struggle because we still feel like we have to prove that we're okay, instead of being okay with not being okay. You know, it's like, can't that be okay? That's the best okay.
All right. So I'm going to come at this from the standpoint of, well, me. from the standpoint of someone who likes what they do and likes keeping busy and likes staying active. I was on a podcast not long ago, and they did a little lightning round at the end of it. And one of the lightning round questions was city or country. And I immediately answered city. And they went, oh, didn't expect that of you, because I'm the small church guy. So they assumed that means I'm the small town guy. Only a couple of years of my life have been lived in small towns. I've usually lived in very busy suburban and ex-urban areas.
Right.
And I like the drive, the noise, the busyness of the city. I like having something to do. I don't have a problem with being bored. But when I look at, like, even for activity, for vacation, I want to go to a city. I want to see and explore downtown. I want to see something I've never seen before. I want to stay active. Is that anti-contentment, or is that just some place where we need to find contentment in as well? Basically, does contentment require slowness and quiet, or is it okay to keep busy, and can we find contentment there too?
I think contentment, the right type of contentment in tune with the Spirit of the Lord, can give us new energy and new strength to do great things. But we have to take time to ask ourselves, why is this so important to me? Is it because I'm being noticed, because I'm being watched? Or is this how I'm wired? Do I just love doing this? And I see your work, I see what you're doing, I read what you write. And I'm not just reading nouns and verbs when I read what you write, I'm reading your heart. And so you've got a heartbeat for this, and you are okay doing what God has called you to do. And as you're doing it, just take that deep breath and remember the why, so it keeps you on track for the right what, and that your motives are good. And it's also healthy to have other people around us who can just ask us those difficult questions. Who are you close enough to that can stare you in the face and say, hey, give me a look at your schedule. I want to see, are you doing too much? And we all need people. I mean, so many of the biblical texts that we quote so often, they're like plural. It's about all of us together in this, instead of being in the singular where someone is so alone and trying to craft their life drama themselves. It's having the right people around us to ask us those difficult questions.
Yeah, that aloneness is also another one of those addictions that we grab onto often almost always subconsciously, because just like we're not comfortable with our internal dialogue, we're often not comfortable with being held accountable by people who are going to say, "Hey, wait a minute, you are too busy, or you're not slowing down enough." I mean, as a busy person who likes staying busy and active, I have had to learn in the last couple of decades, especially as I'm physically getting older as well, that the downtimes, the weekly Sabbath, and in addition to that, those slow down times during the day and those slow down times during the seasons of life are as much a part of, I hate the term, but I can't think of another one right now, are as much the part of performance
Yeah.
as the doing is, and the balance between the two. So it's not a matter of obsessing that I've got to stay busy or I'm going to somehow be inadequate. It's just that staying and being active is a joy to me, but I have to understand that in order to not let that wring me out, every output has to be matched by an equal input.
Yeah. I think for me, it reminds me to one of my other books, and it's like something that's missing so much in our culture also, and that is balance. And so the book is titled Equilibrium. And so like chapter one is believe in the big. And so I think that's important. You know, I encourage all of us to do that. But what is the equilibrium? How do we balance that out? Chapter two is be faithful in the little. Two of the other chapters, hey, don't do life alone. You know, again, like I was saying, have the right people speaking into your life. But what's the balance? What's the equilibrium? Take time alone. And it balances it all out. And I didn't know several years ago that when I wrote that book, that now I would see how that is sort of related in many ways to contentment. And
Got it.
balancing all that together just brings just true, deep contentment in our busy lives.
Any singular approach, whether it's all slow or all fast, can often bring us out of balance. But how does someone know if they are living with contentment or if they're living without contentment? Are there signs that we can pay attention to? Because obviously, in addition to people, as we've already talked about, who are in our life who can call us to that. But if somebody's listening and going, I think I'm happy. I think I'm content, but is it maybe just that I've gotten in the habit of staying busy, or that I've gotten in the habit of repeating the same activities, or whatever it might be? Are there
Yeah.
signals we can pay attention to that tell us whether we are or are not in a proper biblical place of contentment?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the things that we try to do in the book Contentment is since we're writing for people with short attention spans and busy lives, I threw in many more sidebars in this book than I have in any of my other books.
There are a lot, yeah.
Yeah, it's like we just packed it. And I thought, okay, this is the language of today's tribe, and let's do that. But we also wanted to make it practical and doable. So steps we can take. So one sidebar is a week, you know, something different to do each day during a week that's going to redirect our thinking. So it's almost like looking in the mirror and how am I really doing? Am I too busy? And it's just a structure. And then we go through like a whole year of different emphasis during each month. Those are things that are not normal for most of us because we're too busy to be busy the right way. And then just take a walk through that wonderful week from Palm Sunday and to Good Friday into Resurrection Day. Take time to slow yourself and remember the story. We focus on God the Father, God the Son, God the Spirit, instead of just reading it and studying it. Take time during your schedule to just see what God really is like. And that can bring, in my opinion, contentment. And hey, write down a list of things you're thankful for. Don't just say, hey, yeah, I'm thankful. It's good. It's a good day. Oh, yeah, I'm in a hurry. It's like, here's a list of things that I'm thankful for, and here's why. So we wanted to just kind of design the book in a way that it could be, yeah, it's a quick read. But it's very practical and it raises a lot of questions and it confronts issues and it's got stories, but it encourages the readers to, hey, face your questions, your own wounds and your hurts, and refuse to let busyness take the place of that calmness and contentment that the Lord has for us.
And now a short break to talk about something else. If you like the content you're hearing, here are two things you can do for us. First, forward this podcast to a friend. Second, consider becoming a financial supporter through Patreon, Venmo, or PayPal. Just go to carlvaders.com/support. For as little as $3 a month, you can help us put these resources into the hands of the ministries that need them the most. Our support link is in the show notes. Speaking of those practical sidebars, in chapter 21, Contentment and Calling, you give a list of 6 ways that we can practice contentment in our calling. And I want to make that our bonus material. So to our listeners, I really encourage you to become a partner or become a newsletter subscriber so you can get all the bonus material from all of our guests. So when we're done with this, we're going to record 5 or 10 minutes on how to practice contentment in our calling with Chris. And in order to get access to that, you can do it in one of 2 ways. You can become a financial partner going to carlvaders.com/support. And once you become a financial partner, you'll receive some gifts from us, including access to all of the bonus material on our YouTube channel. If you just want the bonus material on the YouTube channel, you can get that for free by going to carlvaders.com/subscribe. You'll then become a subscriber to our weekly Friday email. And once you do that, you'll get a link to all of the YouTube bonus material in every single weekly email. So you can access this if you want. It's really helpful because it's going to be very practical steps, particularly for pastors to be content in your calling and some ways to get there. And so that you can find contentment in your calling. Actually, in that last sentence, I use the term find contentment. And is contentment something we can find? Is it something we have to create? Is find contentment the right term even? I'm trying to remember. I don't think that was actually in the, and it may have been, but that I just didn't pay enough attention. Is contentment something we can find? Do we have to create it? How do you approach that?
That's a great question. And I believe the best response is find what we already have available. I mean, it's here. But we're in such a hurry that we're rushing past what is already available to us.
I mean, that's the subtitle of the book, after all.
It's like it's here. But if you just take time to breathe deeply, the air that's coming in, it goes where it needs to go, and it can stay as long as it needs to stay, and you don't have to take a quick breath. And I want us to spiritually view ourselves and our vocations and our relationships with that type of perspective on contentment. Let it be that is here for us and can guide what we are doing, and refuse to allow us to pursue the more and the better and the bigger and the newer.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned earlier about limits, and chapter 6 is entitled The Gift of Limits. So how are limits a gift, and what do they have to do with contentment? Because for a lot of people, they see limitations as being, and instantly, for some people, as soon as a limit is placed on them, they have an obligation to break through the limits. But I'm with you. I like recognized limits. As something as simple as a pastor, if I'm guest speaking somewhere and they just say, preach on whatever you want, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah.
No, what series are you in? Give me a book. Give me like the tighter the limit, the more fun I'm going to have digging deep into that thing. Whereas if just preach on whatever you want, yeah, I've got stuff I can pull out, but you are going to get... Yeah. You know, one from before, you're going to get a greatest hit sermon, right?
Right.
You may get something out of it because it's a greatest hit sermon for a reason. But if I'm going to get something out of it, give me some limitations, put a boundary on it, tell me to dig deep there. And that's where the real nuggets are found. So let's talk about this. How are limits a gift to us, and what do they have to do with contentment?
Oh, I think it can protect us. It's healthy boundaries. I'm with you when I'm speaking different places. I like to know, how much time do I have? Don't just say, go as long as you want to. And Carl, it's interesting now, you know, I pastored a church in Orlando, Florida for 20 years. And then when I accepted the role at Emmanuel University, I didn't plan on pastoring again. And now I'm pastoring a little small church and loving it. It's just like, I'm just loving this you know, pastoring again. You know, I've got five jobs, working at Emmanuel, writing, speaking for a pharmaceutical company, and I'm pastoring a church. And I'm like, I love this, but I have chosen to put healthy boundaries and limitations there, and knowing the importance of saying no. There are times that our ability and willingness to say no is actually saying yes to what matters more. Again, I've got people in my life who ask me those questions. Are you still doing too much? If so, why? What are you trying to prove?
Well, dude, five jobs. Of course, they're going to ask you that question.
Yeah, yeah. And my counselor, that was how all of this started, because he was basically saying, you're doing too much. You know, right at your age, you're doing too much. And then we, you know, brought up the issue of me living with epilepsy and just the brain tissue, the scar tissue that I have in my brain, and some of those parts that are other stories. But I had to remind myself that I have nothing to prove. I don't need to try to prove something. I can find value in who I am, even with my disability, my weakness, my inability to do things. And in some areas, I just have to say no. And when I agreed to help with this church, I agreed to help for a month. And that's been like 5 years ago now. And we started, it was like five people at this church, and the denominational leader wanted me to go and speak for a month and tell him, should we close the church or keep it open?
Right.
And I suggest, let's keep it open. And God has taught me through that little church, as it's growing in numbers, yes, but in different ages and backgrounds, God has shown me contentment in that so many pastors do not have. And I'm just loving it. I loved it the years that I pastored, you know, so many years ago, and then speaking all of these different places before I was pastoring a local church again. But now I think it's a reminder to, yeah, just find peace. Just find peace in the moments and keep an eye on your schedules. Again, I mentioned this earlier, but don't just look at the what. Ask yourself the why, and have other people that ask those, and remember to say no. To say no is being a wonderful way to say yes to the bigger. Even though it's smaller, in the kingdom, it's so big. Our culture may view it as small, but it's so important for the kingdom.
Yeah, I fully agree. I tend to be the yes guy. I want to have open doors. I want to have open hands and hearts. I want to say yes to everything. But I have learned probably too late. Well, not too late, but later than I wish I had learned it. It's not too late to learn it. I have learned recently in the last decade or so that what you just said, that the well-placed no is actually a better way to stay on track with where your yeses are, because too many yeses just distract you all over the place. Talk about being discontent. Saying yes to everything can put you in a place of constant discontentment, because you're running all over the place and you're completely at the will of others' requests and everything else. And so the well-placed no is really important. Before we get to the last few minutes together and then get into the bonus material, though, I'm going through just the content of your book, and there was one chapter I want to take a moment with here. Chapter 10, you title it Contentment Isn't Comfortable, which I want to talk about, because I think for a lot of people, maybe most people would see contentment and comfort as, if not synonyms, pretty close together. So walk us through that. Contentment isn't comfortable.
That was an interesting journey writing that, because I realized that as I was trying to live this out and studying and applying it, I was getting things confused occasionally. And I can be very comfortable emotionally, but not deeply content. I want to understand that our emotions are real, but our feelings are not to be our gods or our guides. Our emotions and our feelings are like just initial reminders of, whoa, be careful here, be careful here. And sometimes if you feel good emotionally, you are not doing what you need to do in the moment. That should not be our confirmation that we're always on track. I can feel good with that chocolate chip cookie dough ice cream like every day for the rest of my life. That would feel good. But the deep contentment of being healthier, being better. No, sometimes We need the long steps in the right direction. Even if we become tired walking that route, that is the journey of contentment. It is finding it the right way and knowing it's here, it's near. But just that comfortable, everything going just the way we want it to go can lead us in the opposite direction if we let it. So does that help explain it?
Yeah, no, as you're describing it, I think most people would categorize comfort as an internal thing. But as you're describing it, comfort is more external than internal, and contentment is internal.
Yeah, and we just lean so much in the reclining chair of busyness and hurry, and even our comfort of denial, instead of just finding this deep presence of the Lord within us, bringing contentment to us, even if it's having the MRI, even if it's hearing the bad news. It's just choosing to find contentment when everything doesn't emotionally feel comfortable in that moment. It's this deep contentment that's hard to explain, but it's wonderful to study and write about and read about, because it reinforces the true reality of where God is inviting us to be.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier generosity and gratefulness, and you do have a couple chapters on that. So why do you spend like two full chapters on generosity and gratefulness? How much of an ingredient are those to finding contentment?
Yeah, let's take time to be thankful and grateful for what we already have. Well, that's related to contentment, isn't it? And in the kingdom, we are invited to be people who give instead of getting. In a culture that teaches and shouts so loudly that if you get more and have more and obtain more, you may be more content. The kingdom of God is the opposite. It's like, oh, you give. As it comes, you share. Do not hold with tight hands. Open up those hands and receive what the Lord is bringing to you, and keep them open so that you can share with others. Be givers, not what am I going to get next? No, what can I give now? Because there's such a deep calmness inside of us when we live with contentment that we don't have anything to prove by how much we have obtained. Isn't that freeing? that just frees us from that. I thought of it earlier when you were talking. How is this the safe way, the right way? You know, when you get in your vehicle, what do? I mean, you put on a seatbelt. So there's some limitations. That is for the good of it all. And the contentment is keeping us in that safe place where we are, where we need to be, even if it's tight sometimes, even if it's not always comfortable. It is the safe place for us to be.
Before we get to the lightning round questions, in another one of those interludes near the end of the book, you write this: contentment is not the end of the road. It is the road, and you are still walking, which I think is so important, because I think comfort is kind of an end of the road thing. It's a stopping place. But contentment, I think, is one of the misunderstandings of it. If I'm content, then I'm not going to want to move. I'm just going to sit there. But in fact, contentment is not the end of the road. It is the road. So let me just, this last question before we get to the lightning out. Okay, so I'm content. Now what?
Yeah, stay content internally, no matter what you are doing with the assignments given to you externally. And always go back to the why. You know, why am I doing this? And why am I trying to change who I have become and pretend to be someone I'm not? Just asking those questions is so good for us. It's so healthy for us. It's an ongoing journey of contentment today and tomorrow. And we do not just reach our destination one day. It's like we are continuing to live it regularly. And that's just freeing to me. Instead of kind of scoring and keeping points, it's like, no, this is the lifestyle. The lifestyle of contentment.
Yeah, contentment is not a stopping place. It is not the end. It is not a goal. It is a continual practice as we move forward in life. And it's a healthy way to move forward in life as we are following passions that we have and that God has given us. Being contentment with that process is a huge part of it that I have to remind myself of regularly. It isn't automatic. That's the other thing that I, at least in my life, it is never something that I can just, okay, I've got contentment figured out. Now let's move on. It's got to be a continual reminder, a continual practice. It has to be very conscious in my life, because with the moment it stops being conscious, I can very quickly subconsciously go back into discontented bad habits.
Yeah, you're so right. And having the right people around us to keep an eye on us. How are you living? Boy, that's so good for us to take the right approach.
We could do so much more, but we'll have to be content with this.
That was good.
Right. Let's go to the lightning round before we go to the bonus material. And again, a reminder, the bonus material will be 6 ways to practice contentment in our calling. The links to be able to get the access code to all the bonus material will be in the show notes. But for now, we've got the lightning round questions. And I know you're aware of this because you are a listener to this podcast as well. But yes. Now you get a chance to share yours with us. So lightning round question number one, what are the biggest changes you've seen in your field of ministry in the last few years? And how have you adapted to them?
A great question. Threw some of this in earlier, but there are many of the younger people who are tired of the show. And it's like the church that I'm pastoring now that I mentioned, you know, in our conversation, my sermons are based on the liturgical calendar. I had never done that before. I'm loving it. It's kind of telling me what text to use, and I can preach and study on that. And students, some of the young people who have been a part of the bigger happening churches that are doing a great job, by the way, I'm not saying anything negative about them. But this younger generation is getting tired of that, and they're wanting a little more liturgy, merging in with exciting worship and, yeah, things that didn't seem to fit together before. This generation is loving it.
I've seen that myself. I've lived long enough to remember the hippies era of the 60s. I was too young to be one, but I remember looking at them and thinking, that's interesting, but also recognizing, despite all of the extremes and the dangers and the problems of that, there was at least a seeking of something other than what they'd been handed.
Yes.
And then about 30 years later in the 90s, grunge and hip hop kind of came in again with just as bad extremes, but also expressing a discontent with normal and wanting to break out of all of that. And it seems to be about every 30 years, because now here we are in the 20s. And there's a similar kind of thing. And I use the word discontent, but obviously in a different format than we've been using it.
Right.
That there is that in the younger people today. They're not just going to settle for, well, this is just what we've been handed. We want to maybe find ancient ways and combine with new forms to see Jesus in ways that sometimes they see the institutional church as blocking the way to Jesus rather than accessing to him. And again, they're in doing that, they will go into extreme and dangerous areas. That's part of the exploration process. Mm-hmm. But I see that with you as well, and great hopefulness in this young generation too, even while we see it's too often too easy to put a magnifying glass on the extremes and the dangers and not notice that they are an unintended byproduct of some actually very good motivations often.
Yeah, and let's learn. Let's learn as we're living this ministry.
Agreed. All right. Question number two for the lightning round. What free resources like apps or websites have helped you lately that you'd recommend for small church ministry?
I love the Bible Project app. Many of our students who come in, even a lot of those who've grown up in church, they do not know much of scripture or Bible study, but we have many that come from a variety of places and have very little biblical knowledge. And even though they're studying scripture here at the university and learning about it, this is kind of their language, and it speaks it. It speaks their language, and it can get it done quickly and well. And so it's fun. I love to go back, and whatever I'm preaching on, I'll use different devices to get a variety of perspectives.
For sure. Yeah, we'll put a link to that in the show notes. I agree with you. It's for those of you who haven't seen it, it's animations on almost every book of the Bible at this point, and a whole bunch of the major stories and characters and theological points in the Bible. And they are, I have not seen one yet that I'd go, I disagree with entirely. There have been, you know, slight nuances here and there where I would have expressed it differently. They are way deeper than you'd expect for animations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as you're saying, for students especially, this is a manner in which they are more likely to consume this information. And as long as the information is deep, who cares that it's not just flat text on a page? The animation is deep, it's strong. There's some really good stuff in there. So if anybody listening has not taken a look at that, I encourage you to check the link in the show notes to go to that. Yeah, I love that too. So I appreciate that recommendation. Third question, what's the best piece of ministry advice you've ever received?
First time I received the advice, I did not follow it. This is when I was pastoring in Orlando and I was counseling a couple. They needed to see a professional Christian counselor, not just me, their pastor. They needed someone else. And they gave the normal excuse, well, we can't afford it. We just cannot afford to do that. And my response was, you can't afford not to. Well, after they left and I got them set up with a professional Christian counselor, my office was empty, but I had a sense of, Chris, you can't afford not to either. And it inspired me. And it was the greatest advice I'd ever received, even though I didn't follow the advice initially. I was confronted, convicted, and I needed to start seeing someone outside of my normal circle. And I did. And boy, what a blessing it was. It was the right decision.
I had a similar experience. I was recommending to another person or a couple, same as you, it's okay to go to counseling, because this was back in an era when there was a real stigma attached to counseling.
Yeah.
And at one point, one person that I recommended it to just looked at me and said, have you ever gone to counseling? And I had to answer no. And then I went, okay, I need to assess why that is. And you know, I keep telling everybody else to be open to it. I need to be open to it myself. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then number four, what's the funniest or weirdest thing you've ever seen in church?
Oh, well, this is a little different because I wanted to have something just so funny and humorous, but this was just strange and it was weird, but it was wonderful. This is when I was pastoring in Orlando many years ago, and I had a segment because I was pastoring so many people from a variety of nations and backgrounds. And so we focused on Psalm 23. And we went around and I had it read in all these different languages. It was just like wonderful, you know, I loved it. Well, at the end, someone in the congregation started crying out loud. And I'm like, you know, that was strange. What turned out to happen was it was the first time since they had moved to the United States that they had ever heard it in the native language. And then the more we talked about it, it became funny because here's a couple that didn't know each other before. And then they developed great relationships, just two sisters in Christ. They could each relate to their backgrounds, but it wouldn't have happened if it hadn't have been that, hey, I want to hear that in so many different languages.
Wonderful. Yeah. Which Bible translators often use the term that they're translating it into people's heart language. And I love that terminology.
Yeah. Isn't that good?
Because it really is. It hits them in the heart. It's like hearing an old song that just kind of overwhelms you and brings you back somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I cannot imagine, since I only speak English, I cannot imagine moving somewhere and having to speak a second language on a regular basis and not hearing my own language on a regular basis and then hearing the scripture spoken in that. I can imagine why that would be so overwhelming to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful story. Hey, if anybody wants to follow up with anything with you, how can people find you online and get in contact?
Yeah. My website is chrismaxwell.me, chrismaxwell.me. And my books, written 13 books. I've been editor and ghostwriter for over 50 books. My books are all on Amazon and the easiest way to get them.
And the book, of course, that we've been talking about today, the subject is contentment. The subtitle is What You're Searching For
is already yours.
Yours. Yeah. So in the bonus material, we're going to come back to it again. We'll put in the show notes. You'll get links to how to become a subscriber or a partner so you can get them. We're going to talk about how to practice contentment in our calling. So especially for those who are in pastoral ministry, but not just for those who are in pastoral ministry, because we all have a calling. How do we find contentment in that? Chris, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for this wonderful book. I hope that people who are listening to this will get it and follow up and understand even more about the importance of living a life of contentment. Thank you.
Thank you, Carl.
Contentment is so important, but discontent is a tricky monster. It's so easy to spot it in others and even easier to overlook it in ourselves. For instance, have you ever been in a conversation with someone and you know they're not really paying attention to the conversation? They're just waiting for you to either stop talking so they can talk, or if it's in a crowded room, looking for someone else to talk to instead? Yeah, in a later chapter of Chris's book, He writes about the importance of staying curious, not competitive. Curious people are a delight to have a conversation with. Competitive people are exhausting. But as I said, it's often way too easy to see that lack of curiosity in others while overlooking it in ourselves. So, you want contentment? Stay curious. Be open. Ask questions. And listen with open ears and hearts, not to offer a counter-argument to something you might disagree with or a better story that you can top their story with, but because you want to actually learn, that you want to connect, and you want to be a blessing. This episode was produced by Veronica Beaver. It was edited by Phil Vaders. Original theme music was written and performed by Jack Wilkins of jackwilkinsmusic.com. The graphic design is by Solomon Joy. And me, I'm Carl Vaders, and I hope to talk with you again in the church lobby.